Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to A Few Things with Claire and Erica.
Hi,
happy
I'm Erica.
2016. I'm Claire.
I got really excited about saying my name.
Oh, it's
really
a beautiful
important
name.
Thank you so much.
In case you didn't hear, because I was interrupting,
I'm
that's Erica.
Yeah,
I'm Claire. This is it's 2016. We're back.
We are back. You are listening to our podcast, A Few Things, that is based on our newsletter, 10 Things, which goes out every single Monday. And it is a roundup of our favorite discoveries from the past week, from recipes to movies to
beauty products,
all the things.
All the things. You can sign up for our newsletter on our website, ofakind.com, where we sell the pieces and tell the stories of emerging designers.
Perfect. Love it.
Thanks. Nailed it.
We are starting something new this week.
We have a housekeeping note, but it's way more exciting than that makes it sound.
Yeah. And basically we're starting with it because we know we'll forget to say it otherwise. And we'll walk out of here being like, God damn it. Like we totally
got so
that
excited
up.
About yeah. this thing and then didn't tell anybody.
So there is A Few Things book club starting right this minute, basically.
We're still workshopping what the book club is going to be
called.
Can
people send us ideas for the name of it?
So far we have
book it
was our best idea already.
I think
taken.
That might be taken. Yeah. No free pizza here, that's for sure.
No free personal Pam pizzas
or pizza at all.
I don't know. We do record this from the back of a pizza restaurant, which is why Book It would be perfect.
I know.
Okay, so if not Book It, then we have either A Few Books or
a few reads.
No, we have
read
one that
things.
Was read things. That was the better one. That,
that
we
was
came
the
up
better
with.
One. Read yeah. Things. So basically, we're open to suggestions because so far ideas suck. So please send your suggestions.
We
to
could also call it Oprah's Book Club.
Another good one that's not
Thank
taken.
You.
Please send your suggestions for a name to afewthings@ofakind.com along with any other topics you want us to talk about. But the book that we are going to be reading is called Euphoria by Lily King. It came out a couple of years ago, and it is about a trio of anthropologists in the 30s. And there's a love triangle, obviously. Because why wouldn't there be?
Why
there
not?
Are three people
why
in
would
it.
You read it otherwise?
Yeah, exactly. Sounds salacious. We are going to talk about it on our February 17th episode. This is the most advanced planning we've ever done on this podcast. You are welcome. So if you want to read it, if you want to read it ahead of then and listen to us chat about it,
download
cool.
it now
yeah.
or buy it at your local
whatever
bookstore.
Whatever you do.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I'm really excited. Erica's in charge of picking out the books because she is really good at Goodreads.
I am good at Goodreads. We could also go with Clerica's Book Club.
Yeah. Clerica's Book Club.
Perfect.
Yeah. If you aren't on Goodreads, get on Goodreads and follow Erica because she's really academic about it. She keeps it up. She's on
because
top
of like
it.
I said, I really like Book It, and I really like the fulfill the, like checking it off the list. I read 52 books last year.
I know, congratulations.
One per week. Thank
I'm
you.
So proud of you.
Thank
this
you.
Was like it sort of inspired the book club because I was like, I need to start reading, and I don't know if I'll read enough if there's not an assignment.
Yeah, so now we're assigning ourselves reading,
great.
And then we're gonna kick ourselves for assigning us reading ourselves reading at some point.
I'm gonna come in here groggy from having pulled an all-nighter to finish the book.
Or we'll just be like, let's not talk about the ending because we'll leave that to you.
We don't, no spoilers, no spoilers.
Okay, so back to a topic number one, which was just pushed to topic number two, basically. So January, we're not doing resolutions, but we're talking about essentials this episode.
Lifestyles.
That's kind of the, like mm-hmm. paring things down and making sure you have what you need and don't have what you don't need.
Right.
Kind of.
Yeah, because after we talk about some things after we talk about our pantry essentials, we're gonna bring on a very special guest, Aaron Boyle, who's gonna tell us all about how to live in a small space without being cluttered,
how to live your life best.
Yeah, She might disagree because we have a lot of pantry essentials as I'm looking at our list. She might be like, this is insane.
Get it together.
But they're really, so these, and it's really funny because I'm looking at this list and it's, it's so, like, you and I have the exact same pantry essentials and I actually just feel so good about all of them.
Same.
I feel really proud of this list.
Do you know where I think we should start?
Where?
Sauces, because we both feel really strongly about that as a category.
Basically,
of
the
things.
Entire list is sauces, yeah. For the most part.
Well, because everything else you can kind of like work. I don't know. Once you have a good sauce, it doesn't really matter what you're putting it on. That's
and
I
think the first one we should start with is one we both feel really passionately about, which is fish sauce.
Fish sauce, for real.
It's just the best tasting stuff. It's anchovies blended up with some oil, kind of, and it's
fermented. It's like fermented fish. Yeah, which is
It's so good. It's that like salty umami taste, and it's so good. And any Asian recipe, any salad dressing, what else do you put it in?
What else do I put it in? There was something specific recently. Oh, there's this tomato salad that I have made.
That sounds delicious.
What else was in it? I think it's roasted shallots. No. Scallions. Mm. And tomatoes and some rice and this fish sauce dressing.
That sounds
and
it is so good.
Awesome. It's really good. It's really good.
It's the brand that we both love is Red Boat.
Yeah,
it's weirdly hard in general. Fish sauce is hard to find, and I was in LA with my parents over the break, and they were going to make some Asian dish, and we had to go to like three different stores before we found fish sauce, which really shocked me.
The throwback classic that my dad used to use all the time before you know, artisanal fish sauce, which was a thing. There was a time when that wasn't a thing. Was three crabs, which comes in the substantially larger bottle.
Basically,
so that's another classic.
Anytime I'm making an Asian dish, whether or not it calls for fish sauce, I put fish sauce in because it seems like
It's umami. You're just adding a little bit of umami, and why wouldn't you do that? I feel that I always keep tamari around too, and I've started to use mirin. Do you use mirin?
I do like mirin, but
you have to be really careful with it
because it's so sweet. It's like an Asian cooking wine, kind of.
Yeah,
I do.
But it's nice instead of using honey or maple syrup, which are BTW other things on this list for me
also. But yeah, I would say the holy trinity of just like how to make Asian dishes taste good. It's rice, vinegar, or holy quadrinity. Fish sauce, rice, vinegar, mirin, and soy or tamari, depending on your preference.
Speaking of rice vinegar, I have the strongest feelings about rice vinegar.
Interesting.
I love
it. Do you go with the seasoned?
So I do go with seasoned, and I think that might be like a faux pas at this point. I think people are over seasoned. You're supposed to get it without
sugar
sweeter, and whatever,
right?
But that's what I like about it.
Yeah.
And one of my go-to dressings recently has been rice vinegar, mustard, olive oil,
fish sauce.
And no, just and what did I leave out? Rice vinegar, mustard, olive oil, and salt and pepper.
Yum.
And a little maple syrup,
Yeah, I was gonna say you need some sugar in
but
there.
But not actually that, maybe not that much, because the rice vinegar already has
I get the seasoned.
So if you don't get the seasoned kind, you probably need something to mellow it out a little bit.
You know what's not on here? Well, we didn't put oils on here in general, but olive oil, obviously, but sesame oil I feel really strongly about because it goes so well with my Asian quadrinity.
It's the fifth member of your Asian quadrinity.
It's the glue that holds it all together.
Classic.
I don't know the Bible well enough to continue the analogy, unfortunately.
Do you buy, you have fancy olive oil that you use, like, that you don't cook with. It is just like your sort of drizzling things, olive oil.
I aspire to that, but I don't. I'm not good at it because we run out of olive oil so frequently that I end up using them both. My parents do that where they have like the Costco olive oil for cooking and then the good olive oils for dressings, but I'm not organized enough to do that. But I have been using this noodle olive oil that I was gifted for my wedding, and it's a subscription, and I got tons of olive oil from my adopted olive tree.
I started buying this Esperau olive oil, which is this vineyard that I went to in Portugal.
Oh, right.
You can get, they sell it at Murray's Cheese.
Oh, wow.
And it's delicious. And I also, the bottle pours really well, which is important. One of the key things, I think. If you're going to buy an olive oil that you're meant to drizzle, it better drizzle.
It's so true.
It better not dump all over your salad.
Or get caught up in the ridges of the spout.
No, this one has a really good bottle.
Good.
other saucy things.
Hot sauce, duh.
Which, okay, so you have super strong feelings about this.
I change them a lot. I mean, I feel like I'm in a back to my roots phase Tabasco. I go to Tabasco immediately. I love Tabasco Chipotle and also, but I'm really like right now it's all about the classic Tabasco. And I don't know why, because for the longest time it was like
Valentina.
Yeah. And I, you know, Frank's Red Hot is when you are feeling kind of a little trashy, you know, or like you really just want to cover up the taste of whatever you're eating with something.
You want to eat hot sauce. Yeah.
So delicious. Yeah. But these days I've just been really feeling Tabasco on everything, like eggs, salads, anything. So good.
Can we talk about things that you sprinkle on top of things?
Yes.
Nutritional yeast is a huge, huge one for us.
I've had to take a break. I went a little bit overboard with it.
Well, yeah, Claire Mazur story.
So good, though.
I had to take a break. I went a little bit overboard with it.
True.
So nutritional yeast is, it's similar to brewer's yeast. It's like a dehydrated yeast product. And it has, again, with the umami-ness.
Yeah, there's a theme to our list.
Yeah, clearly. Mouthfeel.
Yeah.
And... you sprinkle it on things as you would cheese, but it's not cheese.
No.
Not to diss Parmesan or anything, because we're into that too.
It's really good on popcorn. Like olive oil or coconut oil plus nutritional yeast on popcorn is just such a winner. Also, another thing not on here that should be Old Bay.
Yeah.
Old Bay sprinkled on just about anything is fantastic.
The things that can be sprinkled on things that I also use a lot to just like make a meal out of basically golden raisins,
yes,
pine nuts and capers.
Yes.
Those things and some pasta and a little bit of olive oil, lemon juice, and you have a meal and you don't feel like you just put it together. It feels like a little sophisticated.
The biggest one, I mean, capers is a must, but I don't use it all the time. Pine nuts, I will put in basically any recipe the same way I do fish sauce. I made chili over the weekend and it just felt like it needed something else. And so I toasted some pine nuts in the oven and put them in, and it added so much to my chili. Everything and anything. I get the giant Costco size bags and keep them in my freezer.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Freezing them. That makes sense. Yeah. Because then they don't go rancid.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. Okay.
You know, that's, I guess.
Yes. So they say.
That's how I feel. Yeah. That's what they say. Yeah. They say.
They.
Yes.
What do you keep cans of?
Tuna for sure.
Yeah.
Tons
Which
of
we've
cans
talked
of
about
tuna.
Some on this.
Yeah.
Or teas. What brands are you buying? Tonino?
Tonino. Exactly. Okay. That's the one I have a lot of right now. And it's hilarious because I keep them, this will also shock nobody, they're like in different parts of my kitchen, so I lose track of them. So it's like a scavenger hunt of like, I have so much more tuna than I realize, because it's like there's some.
Why don't you keep them together?
Well, because sometimes.
Well,
anytime that there's a natural disaster coming, I like stock a certain part of my kitchen with water and cans of things,
but
okay. And candles.
It still doesn't actually answer.
So there is some in that part, and then there's some in the part where there are all the hot sauces. You know, don't ask me to explain it, because there's not a lot of rationale.
Yeah. Okay.
So I have a ton of tuna, and yes, mostly. Well, I also have the bumblebee. Is like the backup emergency tuna.
So you, just so everyone
That's
understands
That's like in
fully,
case of apocalypse.
No, let me just, to be clear, you have fancy tuna stockpiled with your candles and your water.
No, that's.
Oh, that's your bumblebee.
Yeah. And that's also like the stuff where like, because this is
I didn't know if you
of,
had backup to the backup, because that's what I was concerned
no,
about.
No, like I have the type of mother who comes and is like, I went to Costco and I had some extra tuna and I just felt like you should put this away in case of emergency. And this is how you get to where I am in my life.
Sounds like amazing.
This is what happens. I'm also feeling like a little under the weather today, so I feel very serious about all of this. I'm like, listen, this is my life.
It's amazing. We both also keep anchovies around for the same fish sauce reason. It really has all circling back to fish sauce. Yet.
Anchovies are huge because also like fish sauce. Anytime somebody's like, make a tomato sauce and saute onions and garlic first, I'm like, right, but you also throw some anchovies in there while you're sauteing those, because why wouldn't you?
Because it's also really magical to watch them disintegrate, which I don't understand exactly how it works, and I'm thrilled to not understand it. I think it's awesome.
And then they're amazing and like blended up with olive oil and lemons for a salad dressing. They're great in everything. I love anchovies.
The other canned thing I keep around all the time are chickpeas.
Yes, same.
Because I feel like You can make a salad with those things so quickly. Yeah. They're really good baked if need be. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just feel like you can pan throw fried. So many things yep. together.
Agreed.
For sure. What do you keep in your freezer? I suck at keeping my freezer stocked with anything. I only keep frozen peas.
I could not believe last weekend when I went to make something and went to get peas, I have like 7 things of frozen peas in my freezer because my freezer is such a mess that I don't think I have them. And then, it was unbelievable. I keep frozen fruit in there too as a backup for my smoothies. Like normally I don't put frozen fruit in my smoothies.
But you make smoothies every morning.
I make them every morning. So I like to like just have a bag of frozen fruit in there in case I ever run out. I keep a ton of nuts. A ton of frozen peas, more than I realize. I really like frozen broccoli too.
I don't really cook with frozen broccoli.
I like putting like with eggs a lot, or if I'm making fried rice. I like the chopped stuff.
There's a really good Gwyneth recipe that I make fairly regularly, a risotto recipe that you basically that just good. Need the arborio. Oh yeah, one. You make that one too. The arborio rice, lemon juice, and peas,
and olive oil and onions.
Yeah, I but think. Like yeah, it's like
spinach. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so it's one of those things that you most of the time can have almost all of the ingredients. Totally. And maybe you just need some greens. Or it's a good way to get rid of the greens that are going bad in your refrigerator.
Also true.
That happens.
I do actually also, I don't mind having frozen spinach in my freezer to put in my smoothies is another thing that I like. Wait, I feel, I just don't want us to end before we talk about miso, which is a huge staple
is
in
that
my
the
life.
Sixth item of the Asian
yeah it is
quartet
rice vinegar miso brown sugar so freaking good
and you're using this as a glaze for fish as a dressing as like
glaze for fish or with quinoa and like golden raisins and tuna it's really good.
I think I feel about golden raisins like you do about pine nuts. I mean, I like pine nuts a lot, but just that why wouldn't you put golden raisins in most
everything.
Things? It just seems like everything would be better that
agreed.
Way.
Agreed. I love golden raisins a lot, but I don't use them as much, but I like this, that dressing is just, it's really good on fish. It's good on anything. Chicken. It's great.
It's great.
Yeah.
On that note, let's go to commercial and come back and talk about non.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Hello out there, it's Steve Jenkins, I'm with Fairway Markets. White Leghorn, Red Wattle, Bourbon Red, Navajo Churro. Well, these aren't names you're likely to hear at a Fairway butcher counter or any other counter today, but before the rise of factory farming, you would have. And at Heritage Foods USA, you still do. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. You see, we believe the best way to help a family farmer is to buy from them. And Heritage Foods is honored to represent a network of family farmers and artisanal producers whose work presents an immeasurable gift to our food system and to biodiversity. The meat we celebrate, whether it's heritage turkey, Japanese steaks, Berkshire pork, or Navajo churro lamb chops, is the righteous kind from healthy animals of sound genetics that have been treated humanely and allowed to pursue their natural instincts. It's a simple fact. Animals raised according to this philosophy taste better. And as we like to say, you have to eat them to save them. Visit us at heritagefoodsusa.com for more information.
Hello, and welcome back to A Few Things with Claire and Erica.
Over the break, Claire was asking Erin, our next guest, what she should throw away that is currently in her pantry.
I said, because first of all, we just appalled Erin with, well,
the
at least I did.
No, I think we both did.
With the number of pantry essentials we have and the things that we stockpile and how I didn't even realize how many frozen peas I had in my fridge.
No, not
freezer.
Impressed, not appalled.
So this is Erin Boyle. She is the mastermind behind the site, Reading My Tea Leaves, and she also just released an amazing and very stunning, very beautiful, very good looking book, Simple Matters, that Claire and I have been paging our way through and like jotting notes down. And Erin, can you tell us a little bit about Simple Matters and how it came to be and all of that?
Sure. Thank you guys for having me so much.
Of course. Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Let's see. Simple Matters kind of started. It was born to some extent from my blog and a series that I have on my blog called Life in a Tiny Apartment. Mm-hmm. That I started writing when my husband and I moved into this very small apartment in Brooklyn Heights.
Tell them how small. Tell everybody how small.
if you count the sleeping loft that we slept in, where you could not stand up, it was 240 square feet.
And if you didn't, it was like
173.
Can you, for people who can't picture square feet, can you tell us what that is?
Like a luxurious bathroom.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, no, it's very small.
A really spacious bathroom.
It was definitely the most common reaction when people walked in was laughter. I mean, it was like laughably small. It was really tiny, especially because you couldn't see the loft because it was above you when you walked in.
Okay.
So you were really walking into this like very narrow 10-foot wide space.
How long did you live there?
2.5 years.
Wow. Impressive. Yes.
Yeah.
And besides all of the decorating tips and how to purge and all of that stuff, did you force yourself to spend a lot of time outside of it because it was so small?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And there was some amount of like returning from, it was also dark, like New York City apartments like tend to be. So there was definitely some amount of, you know, remorse upon return. You're like, oh no, we're back in the hole, you know.
Oh, no.
Except for those 2 hours when there was beautiful sunlight. but yeah, I mean, it taught us a lot.
What was the most important thing that it taught you?
I mean, I think to some extent it crystallized what we had been doing. So it kind of, I mean, not to like pat myself on the back, you know, it's like, good on you. You got it.
You've been
like
doing the
right
thing.
Able to do it. But also it kind of, you know, taught us that we were heading in the right direction in terms of not maybe needing to stockpile fish sauce.
Not accumulating. Or, you know, right. Yeah. Not accumulating.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that also like our, like more than just an aesthetic reason, like there are kind of broader implications for living lighter and living more simply, like that it affects the world around us too. So that's kind of why I decided to not write just a small space book, but to kind of like say you can do this in any size space. And to some extent we had been, but now I think, you know, we doubled in size essentially before we had a child, thank God. And you know, even in a larger space, it's important to kind of keep that stuff in mind.
Totally.
If you're into it.
Yeah, totally.
Obviously. I am someone, and if you didn't pick this up already from the pantry discussion.
Where the tuna is.
Yeah, exactly. I'm bad at this, but have massive aspirations to be like you and to just like not have clutter and not have a lot of things. And basically, since the day that Marie Kondo's book was published, I've been trying to pare down, especially my closet, because that's an ongoing battle for me because I love clothes so much. And I really loved the section of your book on clothes because you... And it was like beyond just like here's what to get rid of and how to get rid of it, but you had rules for how to limit yourself moving forward. Like basically, here's how to make yourself not buy too much. And I loved them.
Thank you. Thanks. I mean, I think it's interesting. We are always looking for like a one size fits all solution. Right. And even like the fish sauce discussion is actually very, you know, pertinent because like I do not keep fish sauce. In fact, I like actively avoid fish sauce. And same goes for like, I don't know that everyone needs a little black dress. Like,
right.
Is it useful? Yeah. For most women, sure. But like,
but only if it makes you feel great and you're comfortable and you're going to wear it in all these situations.
Totally.
It's so funny that you use that as an example because I have one that I bought because I felt like I should have it. Right. I haven't gotten rid of it because I feel like I should have it.
But and you don't like black dresses.
I never have worn it. I have never worn it.
Yeah.
And I should get rid of it.
And I need like three because I need them for different occasions. I need like the t-shirt dress and then the one that you cannot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so you sort of have these concepts for, you know, here's how to limit yourself, create rules for yourself. So the one is the color palette, which I love. Like, figure out, you know, you probably actually really only feel great in a couple of colors. Right. Why don't you just create a rule for yourself that you're not going to get anything that's not that color or one of those three colors?
Yeah, totally.
And then the other one that really spoke to me and I think like to us as a company was this idea that, you know, if you're trying to buy less, why not give yourself a rule that you're only going to buy things that you know you can feel good about the way they've been made and where they've been made and who made them, which obviously just speaks so much to what we do as a company. And I, especially ever since we started Of a Kind, it's like the idea of buying something that I don't sort of have a sense of the person or the company behind it is so foreign to me because I've realized how satisfying it is to do it the other way.
Yeah.
And that does put a nice sort of limit on things.
Yeah, totally.
You talk about gatekeeping in your book. Mm. Can you walk us through the criteria of what gets an object or a thing purchased into your home? Not that this applies to everyone, but what your rules are.
Yeah. Well, definitely. I guess I would start by saying once you've kind of pared down your space, bringing something into it feels almost like...
You know,
I don't like that. It becomes like a little stressful to some extent, you know, where if you have this beautiful dresser that has just your favorite two things, you're not going to feel compelled necessarily to find, even if you love, you know, a little other bowl that you find or something, you're less likely maybe to invite that into your space just because you already know that you have a good thing going. Right. So I think, and the opposite is true too, like where if you have tons of stuff and none of it is terribly meaningful or maybe you're overwhelmed by it, it's easier to bring another thing into
it. So true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, kind of like starting with like blank surfaces is helpful.
Yes.
But in terms of the gatekeeping stuff, I'd say definitely the kind of know your maker stuff really appeals to me. I mean, and it was something I didn't like grow up thinking about at all, you know, and in the past few years, really, I've started to think about it more. And it kind of, for me, started with like food. I was like involved in the sustainable food movement.
I think for a lot of people it did.
Exactly.
Yeah, we started talking about like know your farmer. And I think the same as know your designer, you know, like, and then it feels like it's kind of, it's an act that's like greater than yourself, like greater than just saying like, oh, I need that, I'm gonna get it right away. And like, oh, this is like a thoughtful contribution to someone else's hard work.
Totally.
And I think as like a creative person who kind of works for myself, that also feels good. Like it's nice to feel kind of appreciated and then to also be able to extend that to other people, to like champion, as you guys do, like small designers and small businesses and that kind of stuff.
Something that feels very timely right now is, how do you deal with the things that you didn't necessarily invite into your home, the gifting thing?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Like, how do you get rid of those things and feel good about it? Or two, how do you convey to others in your life that maybe you don't need like them to buy you a new hat and scarf every single year?
Right, exactly. Or body wash.
Yeah.
You know, step one, start a blog.
I was going to say, is everyone actually just terrified to give you things now?
Totally.
Here's a gift certificate.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I do think to some extent I write so much about it. Like, I really spread the message. But I think you don't necessarily have to have an online platform. You can, though, spread the message. Like, you can kind of have frank conversations you know, are kind of maybe difficult or awkward sometimes, and certainly sometimes just impossible to have. But especially in terms of having a child.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I know that all of my friends who've had babies that say this, you know, like, I feel really strongly that I don't want a ton of stuff, or maybe I don't want my daughter to wear pink or whatever.
Onesies.
Yeah. Right. And that's hard.
Yeah. I mean, I think to some extent it's, you know, spread a message like early, like start telling people kind
utero.
Of like what you're hoping for and make it kind of a moral is maybe too strong a word, but let people know it's like a real philosophy that you have.
Yeah, yeah.
Because then maybe they're more apt to take it seriously.
Right.
And then I think beyond that, it's really important. I have this, you know, passage in the book where I talk about the like radical notion of loving everything in your house, like actually enjoying, like visually the things in your home. And
like your broom, for example, which makes it into your book. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Or, you know, your scarf.
Like,
and I think to some extent you have to allow yourself at some point to say, I'm going to pass this along to someone else. I'm going to graciously accept it if that's your only option.
Right. Yeah.
And then you're going to give it to a friend or donate it. I mean, I of course have a kind of unique experience right now, mm-hmm. like blogging and writing about products and that kind of stuff. Things find their way into my life in ways that they never did before.
Yeah.
Right.
And I am pretty, you try to be very honest with people, but, you know, let them know, like, thanks so much. I'm going to pass this along to someone.
Yeah.
Who will love it and give it the attention it deserves.
Exactly.
So something that really spoke to me when we got your book and we were just thumbing through it, Eric was like, oh my God, Claire, this part's for you. And it was the white and bright decorating philosophy because she hears me constantly be like, everything should be white. I just want everything white. Why isn't it all white? Right. Cause I think that works, but I would love to hear you speak to that.
Yeah. I mean, part of it comes from like a very frugal place. Mm-hmm. Like we have always rented apartments. We've always rented apartments in fairly metropolitan places where we are moving frequently, and like investing and painting an apartment feels absurd. And so I've really embraced landlord white, as I like to call it. You know, like,
landlord white.
And it's really good. People always ask me, you know, like what color white did you choose for your apartment? Like, well, until
let me
white,
ask my
I'm pretty
landlord.
Sure.
You know,
like flat white paint, which is not necessarily what I would recommend to people. Mm-hmm. Like I would go for, you know, an eggshell. Yeah. eggshell finish. And I did just really love the Simply White Benjamin Moore, I have to say.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't mean.
No, I like that. Yeah. I like this genuine, heartfelt white specification.
Yeah. But that being said, I've totally been able to live with this untinted white in apartments, and I just feel like there's no regret.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, I definitely have color phobia to some extent. Mm-hmm. I'll fully admit it.
Yeah.
Like I am terrified of painting a room blue and then it's the slight wrong shade of blue. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh God, this is really more teal, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think like you won't go wrong. You'll save money. You know, I don't know. I think that there's.
Well, and for me, the thing too, is if you do really love your objects, then they should be the thing that you want to draw people's attention to. And that's why, you know, with our office, my thing was like, we have all these products in here that should be
that
the
we love and that
point.
Are beautiful things.
Right.
So let those bring the eye to them and contribute the color. And,
I think there's staying power in white too. Yeah. Like there's not. I don't think, I mean, maybe people tire of it. I'm sure there are people out there that tire of white walls.
Yeah.
But I think it stands the test of time and other things that are maybe more, I don't know, maybe you love, you know, some hand-thrown pottery piece and then 10 years later you decide, like, it's just not my thing anymore.
Yeah, right.
You can, like, get rid of that, but something else will look beautiful against a white backdrop. Like, it remains.
Another thing, another sort of term that you brought up in the book that I really liked was slow design.
Yeah.
And this idea of not feeling the need to accumulate instantly or to fill a space suddenly. And I think it's something that I've fought in myself for the last, you know, 3 or 4 years or whenever I move into a new apartment, there's that itch to be like, well, we have to get a new chair for that corner. You have to get it now. So the place looks complete.
Yeah.
So it looks done.
Totally.
And I think it's interesting to hear you talk about that. Can you express how you've waited on things or just how you've designed your own space as you moved into the newer one?
Yeah, totally. I mean, we just kind of by happenstance, partially, you know, like being in graduate school, like finances again.
Yeah.
We've accumulated mostly kind of thrifted things or secondhand or, you know, family heirloom type things. And so all of that is always very serendipitous, you know, like you never know exactly when you're going to stumble upon the great, you know, whatever it is. But I feel like I kind of have this like feeling like it's out there somewhere.
Right.
You know? And it'll find you.
It'll find its way to you.
We have a headboard and two dressers that match each other. They're both in this like very rustic East Lake style. That we found, like, the headboard was from my parents' attic in Connecticut. The dressers we found in North Carolina for $35. And they match, you know. And we painted them to match, but, like, the design is the same.
Stylistically.
So, I have a question about all that. Before, let's say you move into your new place and you haven't found those amazing dressers yet.
Yeah.
And you have an old dresser that you're not crazy about anymore.
Yeah.
Do you keep it in there even though you don't love it until you find the next one?
Yeah, how do you deal?
Yeah, because it's like when I do feel the same way that I want the chair in the corner so badly, but it's because I need to sit there.
Yeah,
right.
These are things that have utility
exactly.
also. It's not like looking for the perfect vase.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
I feel like to some extent, I'll be honest and say that I am almost more comfortable with the temporary discomfort than making like a rash purchase decision.
Right.
Like I what we have a spot right now in our house where I'm like, you know, it's fairly empty. Like,
yeah.
There could be a beautiful little chair there, but I don't want to, one, I don't want to spend a huge amount of time. Like, I don't want to devote all of my energy to, like,
sourcing
mm-hmm. this chair. I would love to find a chair, like, happen upon a chair. And for me, like, being slightly uncomfortable without it is worth it.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
That's interesting.
Okay, I have one more question before we go, because it's something that I've just been thinking about a lot lately, which is the cot as daybed, which you do so wonderfully, and I just think is such a smart solution. And my question about, and basically Erin has this cot, this really minimalist cot that has like throws and throw pillows on top of it, and it looks like this, like it's a small couch basically, and it's awesome, and somebody could also sleep there. My question is, how do you get a cot and make it into a daybed and that doesn't look like a cot? That's the problem that I have.
Right, totally. Well, it always looks like a little bit like a cot.
Right, okay.
And it always feels a little bit like a cot, be honest.
Yeah.
But if you think, when I first kind of said that I had this cot, people were like, that is not comfortable. There's no way that's comfortable. But if you think of it like a hammock.
Totally.
Right.
Yeah.
It's all about that, your it's that frame kind of mind. Comfort level, right? Right. So it's not like a huge overstuffed sofa. Mm-hmm. It's just
you're not going to sink into it for hours and hours and be like, I could never leave.
Exactly. Yeah. But you might like get comfy for a while. We actually, for me, like the mobility was so amazing.
Yeah.
We just switched our whole apartment around so that it's one bedroom. And now Faye, my daughter, has the bedroom.
Okay.
So our bed is out in like the main room.
Right.
And her room has the cot in it, which like if that had been a couch, we never would have been able to fit it into that space. Right. But instead we were able to like rejigger everything. Now she has this little cot where we can read stories.
You can cozy up together.
Yeah. But anyway, I guess in terms of, so I mean, this pillows are helpful.
Yeah.
Like we have a bunch of fluffy feather pillows.
Yeah.
Right now her sheepskin is like also on it.
Well, I also feel like it's like a good display. Like if you have like baskets or whatever that you need to get up off the floor, it can also kind of be a shelf.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And it's also great because it has it's high up.
Right.
So right now, because it's in her room, we have these crates under it where we have like blocks and books and all of that fits.
Yeah,
you know?
That's
like,
so nice.
And it feels tucked away and like it has a place.
Right. Exactly.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
For all kinds of tips on what things to paint white, how to think about the things that are coming into your home, pick up simple matters and read Reading My Tea Leaves.
So good. There's so many little hidden gems in the book. Just things like, I mean, she does cute things like tape flowers to the wall.
We didn't even get to talk about shower melts, which you got to pick up the book so you can talk about a shower melt and learn what that is.
Completely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So you've been listening to A Few Things with Claire and
Erica.
What's
been happening here?
That's what's been happening. You should sign up for our newsletter on ofakind.com. Buy things on ofakind.com because they're things.
While you are at it.
While you are at it, fill your home with beautiful things made by talented designers. And you should also subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Leave us a comment.
We are here every week that you're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're here every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And we'll be back again next week.
Yeah, we will.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.